on first reading.
Let the Senate come to order, please. Yeah, we got it.
Sound it again.
Reports from standing committee. Will the reader please read those?
February 23, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 9, to whom was referred House Bill 19, Wyoming Money Transmitter Act Virtual Currency Exception, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Coe, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. No, Senator Anderson. Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. February 23, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 2, to whom was referred House Bill 76, Supplemental Security Income Program, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Hastert, and Landon. Excused, Senator Driscoll. Senator Burns, Chairman. February 23, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 2, to whom was referred House Bill 88, State Construction Department Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, and Landon. Excused, Senators Dockstader and Driscoll. Senator Burns, Chairman. February 23, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 2, to whom was referred House Bill 109, Public Employee Retirement Plan Contributions, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Hastert, and Landon. Excused, Senator Driscoll. Senator Burns, Chairman. February 23, 2018, Mr. President, to Committee Number 9, to whom was referred House Bill 70, Engrossed, Open Blockchain Tokens Exemptions, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Coe, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. No, Senator Anderson. Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
We have a House bill, first reading of House Bill 78. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 78, Engrossed, Omnibus Water Bill Construction, an act relating to water development projects, sponsored by the Water Committee. Passed the House, ayes 53, noes 6.
House Bill number 78 is referred to Committee number 5, Agriculture. That should clear the desk, shouldn't it? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I move that the committee of the Senate re-resolve itself again back into Committee of the Whole for consideration of 7 bills.
Senator Hicks.
Committee of the Whole will come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 71. The reading clerk will read the Senate file.
Senate File 71, Stand Your Ground, an act relating to crimes and civil liability, sponsored by Senator Bouchard, was referred to Committee Number 5, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
You ever heard the reading of the bill? What's your pleasure? Senator Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 71, Stand Your Ground, do pass. And I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to Senator Bouchard.
Senator Bouchard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, this is truly a holistic bill because when I carry a gun, I also want the right to be able to use it. So not just half of the right, I want all of the rights. So on this bill, I'd like to start backwards on this bill a little bit because I want to start out on page 5. This is the heart of the bill. Use of force in self-defense, no duty to retreat. And that has been the problem in Wyoming. This has the definition, reasonable defensive force, and that's the reasonable person standard. What will happen there is that reasonable people would believe that if you had to use force, that they would probably do the same thing. That's a very good standard to have. It also has on that page, on page 5, starting at 18, a person who is not engaged in illegal activity and has no duty to retreat from any place where the person is lawfully present before using reasonable defensive force as defined in paragraph. Anyway, this part here is the heart of the bill, is restoring rights to people to defend themselves. If we go to the next page, page 4, a person who uses reasonable defensive force may be wrong in his estimation. This is why a lot of cases where the police make those decisions, that sometimes they seem wrong, but you got to have the ability to be in a dark alley and be able to fight back. You don't know what they could have something in their hand like a bottle. You thought they had a gun. The bottom line is they were out to get you. You got to be able to fight back. On that same page, there's the civil immunity clauses. As you move, go on to page 3. There's a section here about immunity, and this is where we have to learn from other states who have goofed this up. There are immunity clauses in other states, Mr. Chairman, but they don't have the ability to invoke immunity. In some states, the courts have just kind of made rules, or the immunity is not even allowed to happen. So this is a section here that we're learning from other states, and we're going to apply it so that way we can protect the rights of people. On page 2, there's some sections there about not arresting people. We shouldn't arrest people who use force to defend their life, their loved ones, or friends. There's a repeat on some of this because some of it's for civil immunity, some of it's for prosecution. I think we all know what this bill is about, and you've even had people tell you that we don't need this bill in Wyoming. And it happens to be those who work within the confines of the legal system. They say it all works just fine, and it should stay the same. You know, I can't speak as eloquently as some of the attorneys in our inner body. And quite frankly, I don't want to argue the hypothesis that we keep hearing. I want to stay on point here. The people that are against this bill that work in the system, the trial lawyers, even the prosecutors, the insiders, the people that all profit from keeping this same system going, they point to the state versus Drennan. They say, case law's there. It all works. It's great. The problem is, Drennan was charged with life in prison over this very issue of the duty to retreat. 10 years. What would happen to any of us for 10 years? What would happen to any of us if any court case that you were locked up and had to rebuild your life? In Drennan case, it was three years. I'm sorry. But 3 years. How long would it take you to get your life back if you were in prison for 3 years, had to fight prosecution, had to go fight the attorney general to be found not guilty? And that's what's happening here. They say the system works. That isn't working. That's broken. That's broken if we tell someone they have to retreat. What would happen to go through this emotional toll, the financial cost of the trial? And more than just the Drennan case, we've got a case that's after the Drennan case, the one that they say fixed all. The Supreme Court heard the case, and yes, they used the duty to retreat again. They used it wrong, but it's still going to go back to trial in April. This is what happens when someone defends themselves in Wyoming. This bill is designed to bring Wyoming into conformity with 36 other states that have passed Stand Your Ground protections. We just can't keep making victims out of citizens who defend themselves. We can learn from the other states that have messed up. The immunity clause, it's in there. It's there for a reason. And I think we need to protect the citizens of Wyoming. And I'll leave it at that, and I'll stand for any questions.
Senator Nethercutt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have some questions on the bill about some of the processes that would be new to our criminal justice system. So looking at page 3, subparagraph D, lines 1 through 10, which allows for a person arrested or prosecuted to believe that he's entitled to immunity to file a motion with the court. Does the bringer of the bill anticipate that the public defender's office would be providing this particular service, or would this be something provided by a private counsel dealing with this immunity? And then I have an additional question as well. I'll just put out there. So on page 4, lines 8 through 17, would this be after the defendant is bound over to the district court, or would that be in the circuit court?
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I think this Stand Your Ground is very important and needs to be done right. I really believe that we do need this in the state. There's another bill in process that I like better, so I'm going to be voting against this bill.
Any other questions? Questions for the sponsor. Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to applaud the bringer of the bill for bringing this legislation because I think it raises some important discussion points that we need to have in Wyoming. I agree with him on when he says that the heart of the bill really is found on page 5 by amending 6-2-602. That talks about using force in self-defense, and I think that any time we're talking about a situation like this, it's that makes some sense to me of the language that's included in that particular part. I did have a couple of questions, though, that I presented to the bringer of the bill but haven't heard an answer. I did a little research on the Castle Doctrine, which Wyoming passed in 2008, and similarly, the Castle Doctrine created defense. So anytime you have a situation where someone is killed, there's an arrest and a jury trial, and it created the Castle Doctrine, which could be used in court as a defense. And so my question is this deviates from that in that it would create on page 1 going on to 2, 7-2-109. And on to page 2, if you look at that line 6, it says a person who uses reasonable defense forces shall be immune from arrest, detention, charging, and citation. And I think my question, Mr. Chairman, to the bringer of this bill is that kind of concerns me in that the arresting officer would be at a scene and would have to make the determination of whether or not that defendant was entitled to this defense. And so in a sense, the officer would be the trier of fact versus a jury. And then also looking at the Castle Doctrine. So that's my first question, is why that deviation? And then again, looking at the Castle Doctrine, let me find it here. Oh, the Castle Doctrine created 6-1-204, which does provide immunity from civil action for justifiable use of force. And if you look at that provision, it's literally one sentence. And so I'm wondering why the immunity from civil action, which starts on page 3, goes for a full page and a half. And so I am comfortable with this concept and think that it's an appropriate one for Wyoming to be having, but I would agree that we should be getting this language right, and so I'm curious if the bringer of the bill would be amenable to working on some of these changes.
Senator Bouchard, I think what I'll do is there's at least 4 questions pending if you want to answer those, and then if there's additional questions, we'll take those.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, because I'm already getting confused with all these questions. Let me start out with the Castle Doctrine first, and maybe this, because I think some of this answers on the Castle Doctrine, is that on Section 7, It's criminal procedures, and that's why you'll see a lot of this under Chapter 7. On the Castle Doctrine, I heard the statement that a lot of this is under Castle Doctrine, but that's not kind of what we're doing here. We're going beyond Castle Doctrine. So as far as these procedures that are in this bill, a lot of what has happened in these cases is there's just jury instructions that vary from case to case because of the circumstances that are happening. And that has caused so much of the riff in the cases that I thought that if we put this very clear, I don't think the more words don't make it less clear. They're very clear on what the courts are to do with this language, and it also allows a better decision from the courts to be made when they go into a trial. As far as the part of Section A, which on page 2, you know, I wish if I had my chance I would have flipped this around, because what we're doing is we're looking at A and thinking that that is the heart of the bill. If we open up a code statute book, we'll see that statutes are all stacked, and the police aren't going to look at that one and say, well, we can't do anything here. We can't investigate, and we can't do anything else. There is, most likely there's going to be some other reason they're going to charge somebody or at least detain them for something, not necessarily for using using reasonable defensive force. As far as the question about the court procedures, when we drafted this bill, I don't remember if it was instructions or some of the loose talk that we had on the draft on page 3, starting on line 1, is that we wanted to give a lot of room to the courts to actually administer this procedure here. Because what it really is here, folks, and you're hearing that, oh, well, the courts don't do this and we can't do this, but I think people need two bites of the apple. I think what happens, Mr. Chairman, and similar to a case in another state, they didn't even know they passed the law. The prosecutor had the guy in jail. The courts had him locked up. They had to review it a few days and figure out, wow, we can't even put this guy in jail. I think that is similar to what this is, because the courts are going to have to decide this procedure. I was very specific that I don't want to lock them down so hard where we were telling the courts what to do. This is just telling them what we want them to do. And so I don't know if that answers your question. There was a second question that I missed, and it was, I think it was on page 4, about the prosecutor having to file a motion. But I, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have to sit down and hear that question again.
Senator Nethercott, would you like to restate that question?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. So a couple of things that I have concern about. One is on page 3, subparagraph D, and then also on page 4, subparagraph C, when we're talking about this, the ability to file a motion and have this hearing, is it the sponsor of the bill's intention that the criminal defense attorney would be providing this particular service of doing a motion to grant the defendant civil immunity within the criminal proceeding, because it's found within the criminal code? One is one question. And then also, is that particular proceeding to happen in the circuit court or after the defendant has been bound over in the district court?
Senator Bouchard.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that the intention with these procedures was not to nail it down so hard where the courts couldn't decide. I mean, the biggest thing that I saw, Mr. Chairman, is that the other courts didn't have any procedure to allow the immunity hearing and to invoke immunity. So the intention of this draft is to give plenty of room to the courts. There is not a section in here that says the courts shall do it a certain way.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, we took about 2.5 hours of testimony last night. A lot of the questions that are brought up on the floor are some of the questions that we heard last night. The reason we didn't bring any amendments forward is because we didn't necessarily, the time was late, and the time is going to be late today if we were trying to work this bill. So what I can tell you that the reason for the bill from the perspective of a lot of on the committee was that it was asserted by different trial lawyers that this already exists. However, it exists only in what we have Wyoming pattern jury instructions. And so reading through the jury instructions that essentially you can almost derive everything in the jury instructions that's in the bill. Now, there's some differences in different things, like whether it should be probable cause, preponderance of evidence, clear and convincing evidence. Those were some of the discussion points that was brought to us that there are some problems possibly, and that there were amendments proposed in those rounds. Now, so the question is whether or not what happens in the field when the officer is there. Those questions were brought up, and it really kind of goes into whether it's probable cause. If it's today, it is probable cause as to whether or not there's an arrest or whether there's some retention or whatever, or the person's thrown in jail. So they have to make up their minds. They're not necessarily the determining facts, but they're doing the same thing as they're doing today, that they have to assess the situations and figure out whether or not if there's a body laying on the ground, they got to figure out whether or not this applies. And so there's some thought that has to be put into that as to whether or not the word arrest goes in, stays in, or detention stays in, goes out. You know, so we got some discussion to do. But what I would say, Mr. Chairman, is that really the reason we're doing this is because most folks don't have time to go through all of the precedent cases and read those, read all the jury instructions, and then make a determination whether or not they actually do or do not have the right to retreat, to do or do not have the right to self-defense, and what that is and what it pertains. That's what this bill is trying to do. It's trying to condense all of the law and all the precedents down to statutes so people understand what their rights are when they're in those situations. So it's easily understood. So we got a little bit of work to do on this bill, but for all in all, I think the meat is on the bones. We may have to do a little trimming from you know, places to places. And that's where I think if you have the time, we can get these jury instructions to you. It's got the precedence in it. You can actually read and see what the differences is. But in a lot of circumstances in the jury instructions, it's not that far off from what's actually in the bill. You know, and there are some things, and there's maybe some clarification we have to make as to whether it's district court or whether it's circuit court. I would guess if there's a body, it's probably maybe it's district court. But you know, I don't know. I'm not an attorney. I've got one right in front of me that probably could tell us how it's handled now. You know, so those are the things that we get to draw on the wealth of experience of the folks on the floor, and hopefully we can work this thing together and people will understand.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. When you're going to be doing your trimming on this bill, are you going to be involving page 4 at all? Because the way I read this is if a person uses reasonable force, maybe wrong in his estimation. So he comes around the corner and sees a guy who has, you know, say a lighter in his hand or something. He shoots him. And turned out the guy just had a lighter, was a nice guy, wouldn't shoot anybody. The family of the dead guy sues you. And even if the court, criminal court, says, yes, you were wrong, but it was pretty reasonable, then all your court costs in defending against the civil case, the court has to give you back, has to repay you after you shot the guy. So I guess my question is, who pays the court for that? The court's going to pay me my legal fees. So does the state reimburse the court for this? Are we going to, or are we going to suddenly be getting large increases in requests for appropriations from the various courts?
I'm going to allow Senator Bouchard to answer these questions as they come. Go ahead, Senator Bouchard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we just take a part of what a section says, Mr. Chairman, and we don't read the rest of it with it, it kind of just defeats the whole purpose of what we're doing here. What we're doing here, the rest of that says, reasonable basis for the belief that the person and the person acts reasonably in response to that belief. And that is part of the whole reasonable person standard, where he may not have had a gun, but he had a knife. He had a stick. He was causing harm. And the whole idea in these cases, in the Drennan case itself, the one that is the landmark case, where they keep saying that this fixes everything. In that case, Mr. Drennan was putting up a no trespassing sign as he was trying to evict someone. And they probably had some words, and the person that was being evicted attacked him. He didn't have a gun. As a matter of fact, the question was, in court, why do you have a gun? To Mr. Drennan, why do you carry a gun? Why do you have a 9mm strapped on? And his attacker didn't have a gun. But he shot him, and his attacker died. It seems to me that this exact thing that this part of this bill is doing is to protect you. So that way, when you do use defensive force, and I got to tell you, if someone was hitting me, I'm not going to just get pummeled. I'm going to fight back. And I'm sure many of you would too. Whatever force you could use, whatever you could get in your hand to defend yourself, you would use it. The juries have went against guys like Drennan. And like I said, he was put in jail for 3 years until they overturned it. And it's all based on the fact that the courts and the system and the prosecutors and the juries will get sucked into this mantra that, oh, why did you have a gun? Why didn't you use your fists? And I think that is what Section B on page 4 is really getting at.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Anderson.
Senator from Goshen County or wherever he's representing. I think he represents a few counties. He's going to educate us with those jury orders and that kind of stuff. There's a school that we put three people through to figure these things out. I think it takes some of them 2 to 4 years to get through it, just studying that kind of stuff. I think if you're in this situation, you are in need of one of those trained people called an attorney that knows what they're talking about on these issues rather than us laymen. So I think we should refer to some of the people that know what the story is.
Members of the body, I am going to start to keep this on the bill. If you've got comments or suggestions or questions, but let's please stay on the bill. Senator Myers, on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I will say is this is a jury instructions that was from those learned individuals that spent several years across the Hill. Called attorneys. And this is the jury instruction, and this is what it says. If a person so confronted acts in self-defense upon such appearance of danger from honest belief, the right of self-defense is the same whether the danger is real or merely apparent. Now, that's what goes to the jury. I'm not making it up. This is exactly what the jury instruction says. Now, I caution you that that is out of context to the whole thing. And so I want you to read the whole thing, you know, if you want to. Now, it's to that question about are we going to have a lot of funds that are going to be going out of this. This is the same where people are getting paid back by being wronged by the state. It's the same thing that we've had on this floor several times, is where somebody's falsely convicted, ends up in the pen, he's exonerated for with DNA or some other deal, and we come down here and say, well, yeah, we're going to, because of the wrong done to him, we're going to go ahead and put some money in the person's pocket. We've done that before. It's been in here. We've done it for several people. I'm not sure whether some of them pass, some of them haven't passed, but it's the same thing that we've done in the past, so that's nothing new.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just wanted to rise to indicate that I support this notion, and I appreciate the sponsor bringing the opportunity to visit about it, but I share some of the concerns of my friend from Natrona County in that, you know, it's not just the title of a bill that we're voting on. I really appreciate a couple of our folks from the floor who are a little bit more learned in the legal profession helping us out a little bit to say, well, why did we create 72109 versus why didn't we put it underneath 61204? I just want to, you know, my concern is if as we work this bill that came out without amendments out of committee and then here at committee as a whole, I just want to make sure that we're making good law. I mean, I get all the arguments, and I understand the passion of some of the sponsors and appreciate that, but the reminder to myself is let's make sure this is good law.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm concerned about kind of some scenarios I've been thinking through on the language of this law and who gets to interpret the reasonableness standard and really the duty to retreat in all instances not being there. And, Mr. Chairman, some of the thoughts I'm having is with this statute passed, as the person who ends up shooting somebody, I get to interpret the situation, I get to set the grounds, I get to decide the reasonableness. And really, if in my interpretation, based on any situation that's going forward, I feel physically threatened, I get to shoot and kill somebody. And, Mr. Chairman, there are times when that is reasonable. But this doesn't allow really the full facts to be considered. So, for example, I can be following someone down the street for a couple of miles, right up until I think they turn around with a stick and then shoot and kill them. But based on this legislation, you can't consider the fact that I had been following them for 2 miles because it only matters that at that moment I thought I was threatened. I initiated the whole situation. I could have been shouting insults at them as I'm walking down the street because I'm not in violation of any law when I'm shouting those insults. I'm just expressing my First Amendment right to do so. And then shoot and kill them once they turn around, because, again, I felt threatened. Even further, Mr. Chairman, another scenario. I am across the room from somebody, and we're exchanging words. We're shouting back and forth at each other. It becomes heated. I know I've got a gun. Pretty confident the other person doesn't. We're not doing anything illegal yet, but I'm going to go over there, get in their face, and I'm going to escalate that situation because I get to bring a gun to a fist fight. And I know that's how it's going. And the moment I get hit in the face, that's the end of the other person. And that's straight down the middle of the plate of this legislation. That's not even going to take any, you know, a couple of minutes of interpretation. I wasn't doing anything illegal, and I was threatened. I initiated the situation. I intentionally escalated that situation. But it was perfectly reasonable for me to assume that I was going to get hurt. because I created a situation where I was going to get hurt so that I could then reasonably shoot the other person. There are a lot of loopholes here that we're putting into statute that a court would not allow. A court would say, no, you started that. Or you followed them 2 miles shouting insults at them. The jury is not going to sit back and say, that was fine. They were going to say, no, that was your fault. You instigated that and that's your problem. Which is why we want to enshrine in statute that a jury doesn't get to make those considerations. They don't get to decide based on the facts and the circumstances. They can only decide, would a reasonable person in that same situation feel that they're threatened with bodily injury? Yes, they just got hit. Would a reasonable person believe there was a weapon? It was dark. The person spun around quickly, and they seemed to have something in their hand, which may or may not have been a cell phone. So this legislation, as drafted, allows somebody to create circumstances where they have a license to kill the other individual. And the court then, the jury then, is unable to question those circumstances because they don't get to look at the circumstances explicitly in statute, not just at the civil level, but at the criminal level. So, Mr. Chairman, I would say if we do want to draft legislation, we need to make sure that those can be looked at. We need to provide some exceptions, and we need to let juries consider those. Right now, that individual can't even be arrested based on the circumstances of what we just discussed because clearly it falls within the statute. So right now in statute, Mr. Chairman, we have a set of laws that allow a judge and jury to consider what's going on and still allow that self-defense to prevail. We've seen it happen recently in my county. There was an instance which wasn't even prosecuted. Unfortunately, somebody ended up passing away as a result of that, but it was in defense. Everybody looked at it. The prosecutor looked at it, and they just said, what an unfortunate circumstance. And it was. But there was no question that it was in self-defense because all the circumstances were looked at and considered, and no action was deemed necessary, Mr. Chairman. This goes too far.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is a great debate. It's an important topic that deserves a lot of consideration, a lot of debate. You know, we've been through an awful long week with, I think the expression was I've been riding the Senate like a rented mule. But anyway, you know, I think we need to. This is the last day of committee of the whole. We're working on this. We need to make sure it's good law. My suggestion is that we look at this thing. If it's up to me, my preference is I believe we should move it forward. We should take the weekend, bring your amendments, get your arguments together. Let's work this bill, and let's see if we can come up with something that works. And you know, we've got a second reading, we've got a third reading, and a third final vote to be taken later on. But anyway, on the bill.
Senator Anselmi Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. I'm concerned that this bill has a lot of problems with it. I think it's not an unfair thing to look at this issue. I was in my driveway the other day. Two gentlemen came up to me and were asking for money, and I was really afraid. I was afraid. But should I have been able to shoot them? Because I was afraid, and I was like, can I get to my door? Are they going to shake me down? And so I do understand the need for this, but my idea would be like, let's move to the interim, let's take it to the judiciary, let's get it right instead of having muddled law. There can't be enough amendments that's going to be to fix all these questions that I'm hearing out here. Let the judiciary get it right, talk about it in the interim. That'd be my suggestion for people to think about over the weekend. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
In light of the previous suggestion, which I think is very sound, as I look at page 5, subparagraph 3 makes a lot of sense to me. On subparagraph, the paragraph E, starting at line 18, I can see some scenarios, which I think are very real, Mr. Chairman, where retreat is the reasonable and prudent course and ought to be adopted. I can see how there may be a drift in the legal precedents that needs to be corrected so that we have a proper standard there, and I would urge some consideration of amendments in that particular area to see if we can't strike a little better balance than we have right here.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Moniz's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 71, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Passes. It's passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate Joint Resolution Number 5.
Senate Joint Resolution 5, Promoting Individual Choice in Healthcare, sponsored by Senator Peterson. A joint resolution requesting Congress and Wyoming's congressional delegation to endorse use of health savings accounts and reinsurance programs to promote individual choice in healthcare. It was referred to Committee Number 10, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so the recommendation that Senate Joint Resolution Number 5 do pass, and to explain this creative little joint resolution, I yield to Senator Peterson.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is for our majority floor leader. I'll try to be brief. Thank you. No, I'm just kidding. But I will be brief. We've all known about this resolution. Mr. Chairman, this is how states communicate with our federal partners. And we know that this is a national issue, but it affects our state and its citizens directly as we talk about health insurance and coverage and health care costs. So this is a resolution, and I'll just walk it through. Page 3, I was notified today by one of our good lobbyists that there might be a problem with lines 18 through 20 talking about the ERISA. This is the Employee Retirement Income Security Act and how it relates to surrounding states around us and companies that might have other businesses in surrounding states. I don't know if I have any heartburn over that, but I just thought I'd point that out for anybody in the body that might have heartburn over that or understand the issue better than I. That could possibly be deleted and nonetheless. Section 1 in this resolution, we talk about lifting the contribution limit for individual health savings accounts, requiring greater transparency in health care pricing, and loosening Employee Retirement Income Security Act preemptions. Section 2, we talk about legislation to fund reinsurance programs, authorizing prescription drug importation, and expand possibilities for states to waive federal requirements under the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act and under Medicaid. Section 3, we talk again about health savings accounts and reinsurance programs, but we ask them to support and promote the use of health savings accounts and reinsurance programs and prescription drug importations. Section 4, we talk about encouraging a study and or investigation, both of health savings accounts, contribution amounts, necessary reinsurance reserves, so on and so forth. And then Section 5, we talk about inviting health insurance companies to participate in the discussion and maybe even providing proposed legislation or rules to establish health care billing transparency requirements. And then in Section 6, we talk about how this will be dispersed among our own congressional delegation, the Committee on Ways and Means in the House, the House Committee on Energy and Commerce, and then, of course, our Senate Committee on Finance and Committee on Health and Education, Labor and Pensions. And that's the distribution of this particular resolution. And I'd stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Question. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it does so with a favorable recommendation on Senate file Senate Joint Resolution 5, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Bill passed. Senate file passes. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 105. If the reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 105, Drug Donation Program Act Expansion, sponsored by Senator Hastert, an act relating to food and drugs, was referred to Committee Number 10, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Senator Scott. Oh, hold on a sec. All right, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a recommendation that Senate File 105 do pass. There was no standing committee amendment from Committee 10. I yield to Senator Hastert to explain the Senate file.
Senator Hastert, there is a standing committee amendment. Would you like that read in at this time?
I would, please.
Senate File 105, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 7.
Senator Hastert.
Mr. Chairman, may I have privilege of the floor before I begin?
Privilege of the floor is yours, Senator Hastert.
I forgot to mention when we were doing Senate File 102 that I had a document passed out to everybody on from NCSL on board certification for teachers. And then also, Mr. Chairman, right in the mix of that, because I thought we were going to be working committee the whole, there'll be some documents that I'll reference for this bill also. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, I bring you Senate File 105, Drug Donation Program, and ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, as I stated on my opening statements on this bill, that this program started in around 2005, and we began that drug donation program, and it's kind of ran on a shoestring since that time. We really haven't done any kind of enhancements to this program. When the director was in the Committee 10 earlier this week, his comments were along the lines of, it's a jewel of a program within the Department of Health and a small program, and it serves about 3,000 people a year. It has right now currently about two and three quarters employees and an annual budget of around $275,000. With that, they distribute around $2.5 million worth of prescriptions annually. And we've received donations from in the state of Wyoming from medications all over the country. And the program is currently limited because it doesn't have space or the people to redistribute available medications. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to be referencing a chart that you have on your desks there somewhere. And like I said, I apologize. I had that. I put that out earlier because I thought we were going to get to it earlier. But we had looked at different options, and the Department of Health had put together a couple of different options for a small expansion and a large expansion. Both of these expansions provide one-time funding for the program to be able to move. Right now, they're in a facility, and it's around 928 square feet in that vicinity, and if we provide additional funding and additional personnel, they can move over to the Hathaway, which is about twice the size, and it's also state-owned. We're paying around $6,600 for the space that they're in right now, Mr. Chairman. So the first part of the bill, what we do with the bill itself is we allow for the expansion of being able to accept manufacturers' donations. They need the personnel to be able to process individuals to accept manufacturers' donations. And why this is important is the drug donation program right now can only accept they can't accept perishables types of medications. And so insulin, for example, is a great example. It's perishable and needs to be refrigerated. They cannot accept it, and they can't store it, and they can't handle it. With this bill, if we pass this, they'll be able to process the applications for the individuals and help them get insulin through this program right from the manufacturer. So that's a critical add to this program, Mr. Chairman. So essentially, that's what the bill does. And right now, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go to the standing committee amendment to, because that'll explain the rest of it.
Would you like to move that?
My chairman stood up over there, so.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, has this been read in?
Yes, it's been read in.
Okay. I move Standing Committee Amendment 1 to Senate File 105. Mr. Chairman, as the good senator from Sweetwater County mentioned in his narrative, the costs expressed were one time. This is an ongoing program, so we decided to take all the money that it's going to cost, the move over to the new building, plus they need three additional people, plus I think they already had a couple on, plus a part-time person. So taking all those costs together, the total cost was $400,000. And I thought that if we're going to fund this thing, we should fund it, first of all, for the entire 2 years. Secondly, I think we should know exactly what it's costing. It is quite a bit pricier than I had thought it was going to be, but frankly, it is a very good program, and I'm going to vote for it. I think it's worth it.
Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 105, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Amendment's passed. We're back on the bill.
Question
on the bill's been called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 105, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Bill is passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 121.
Senate File 121, State Funded Capital Construction 2, an act relating to state funded facilities, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, was referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstad, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 121, State-Funded Capital Construction. Mr. Chairman, there is a Standing Committee amendment as well as a number of Committee of the Whole amendments. I would like to take us through this bill hopefully as quickly as possible. Mr. Chairman, starting on page 2,
Senator Burns, do you want to, just procedurally, do you want to dispose of the amendments, make a motion to...
I would like to have it read in, please.
Okay, have them, all of them?
No.
Just the Standing Committee.
Standing Committee Amendment, please.
All right.
Senate File 121, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 4.
Mr. Chairman, I've thought long and hard about this, and I've decided the thing to do is take us through the bill as it came out of the Joint Interim Committee, then discuss the Standing Committee Amendment, because the Standing Committee Amendment is extensive, so that everybody knows what we're talking about. So I'd like to basically take us through the projects themselves, because page 1 is just the title and just is just the usual stuff. So, Mr. Chairman, starting on page 2, there is a $30 million loan from the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund to community college districts to build dorms. If you go to page 4, you'll see that this is the rate shall be 0.1%. The loan shall not exceed an initial term of 25 years. And then there's all kinds of terms to the loan. There is a loss. There's a 1% origination fee that's to go to a loss reserve account. One of the interesting things about this particular loan was in the if you look on page 4, that paragraph Romanet 3, it has a description of what community college districts qualify for this. If you read that, there's only one college district that qualifies, and that is Laramie County Community College. Go to page, and so you have other descriptions of the loan and sideboards and stuff until you go to page 9, which deals with Ranch A. Ranch A has been turned over to the state, and then there's a legal description on page 10. We'll get to the appropriations toward the end of the bill. There is on page 10, Romanet 8, on starting on line 19, going on to page 11. There's a restriction that says that any capital construction that's going to be built with federal funds, but to be maintained by state funds, the state will get to design, will get a review of the drawings and plans of any one of these, especially since we're going to have to pay for that maintenance. And that's from a situation where I think we've discussed that on the floor, where we found that the buildings, the new buildings they're building to replace the old ones, are much, much larger, and so the utility bills are about 3 times as much, which is what we have to pay for. Page 11, that deals back with the dorms again. We go to Section 3. Section 3 is just definition. Section 4, that's where we get into the real capital construction projects. And you'll see that as you go down. NWCCD is Northern Wyoming Community College District, and NWCC is Northwest Community College. A lot of people confuse that quite often. And you go on to page 14, you see the rest of the projects. The column of numbers on the left, that is general fund money. The column in the middle are federal funds, and the column on the toward the right, second from the right, that's the other funds, in some cases from special revenues or funds that have been raised locally. And then the final column you see is the total appropriation, including the spending authority for the other funds. And then there are specific footnotes attached to that. You go to page 16, and you see starting on line 19 that there is an appropriation for the University of Wyoming. There's two there. One is for the UW Family Medical Center in Cheyenne for remodeling, and the other is for UW Athletic Facilities, $25,875,000. And that is a challenge program. It's supposed to be a 1-to-2 match. So for every $2 that is brought into the university, the university will provide $1, so it should total about $75 million. That is for the west side of the stadium and the Corbett Pool. You go to page 17, starting section 5, that is the Wyoming Science Initiative, and that provides the additional about $24 million, $23-plus million to finish the funding for that. You go to Section 6 on page 18. Here we start dealing with the Casper State Office Building Advisory. This sets up the task force to oversee the construction there. And that continues on. And if you get to page 23, you see what the expected amount of money is. It's the appropriation, $45,485,195, and this is to procure, develop, and implement Level 2 and Level 3 studies and construction for the building. In addition, on page 18, there's another $500,000. Oh, no, $500 of the appropriation is spent on a qualified owner's representative, which is something I had never heard of before, but apparently we want somebody there to oversee the construction and make sure it's done right. Go to page 24, and This is actually from 2016, and this is where we and you see on page 26 the table. That's all from the capital construction bill from 2016, and the reason that's there is if you go down to line 19, you've got the $13,500,000 that we're taking from Torrington. And we're applying most of that to the penitentiary in Rollins. So page 27 are the footnotes attached to 2016. You go to page 28. We're again amending 2016 session laws for to include inter-fund loans. You go to page 30, and you see the. This is the 2019. We're back up to this budget, and you see that they've changed, or we have changed, some of the priorities. And one of them is the mineral impacted road, and then the footnotes for these. You go to section 9 on page 31. There's $400,000 appropriated, and this is for the property that the state owns already, that is the state is currently using for its office building, and I guess there is a another lot, large lot next to it that's something of a problem. So this is all a plan to turn that into a parking lot and to do something about it. And starting on page 35, for a number of pages, you have legal description. Until page 39, this is where we get to the mineral impacted road at Kemmerer that we've already discussed. And then page 41, this is where you see the appropriation for the Ranch A. And then you get on page 42, you get the details of the $25 million challenge grant for the university. And that goes on to page 47. And this is where you have $5 million for the Veterans Museum up in Casper. And until page 48, section 15, that's where a task force is set up to look at the dormitories at the university. And the details of that extend for a number of pages. Of note, on page 54, starting on line 18, says, no university-owned property of any kind will be sold, traded, transferred until after the adjournment of the 2019 legislative general session. So that puts a year moratorium on there. And the last portions are basically conforming and technical. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill as quickly as I could go through it. Now, to the amendment, to the Standing Committee amendment. Keep in mind, this was the bill that was developed by a committee that was composed of 5 senators and 7 House members. Then your Senate Appropriations Committee was able to work on it itself. We did 8 things, just real quick. We can go through it and the bill, and I'll show you, but just Senator, so you know.
Senator Burns, would you move this Standing Committee amendment?
I thought I did. Oh, at this point, I would move the Standing Committee amendment.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we removed the Community College Dormitory Loan Program entirely. We removed the appropriation and the footnote for the Veterans Museum. We removed the appropriation and the footnote for the UW Athletic Facilities. We did a technical correction to replacing the table on page 26. If you look at the amendment, you'll see an entirely new table there. That's because we misprinted the 2016 table in the bill itself. In the amendment, on page 2 in the amendment, third from the top, you'll see the Ludden Library. We forgot to put that in the bill. We removed the interfund loan guarantee to the University Science Initiative using SIPA. We removed the Athletics Challenge Program. We removed the Veterans Museum section. We removed the UW Housing Task Force. And Mr. Chairman, if you'd like me to, from the Standing Committee amendment, because it is, I think, dividable, on the first line, the first 16 lines are all conforming. Then line 17 through 26 is the, that's where we deleted the dorms, the dorm program. Page lines 27, 28 is conforming. Line 30, again, is the dorms. Line 32 and through 35 are the Veterans Museum. Line 36 is UW. Line 38 is UW. And then you've got that table again. I hope nobody wants to get rid of that. Page 2, line 20, that again, that is where we get from page line 18 down, that's where we get rid of the interfund loan. And then page 3, line 1 and 2, that's UW. Lines 3 through 6, that's the Veterans Museum. Lines 7 through 9, that's the dorm task force. And lines 11, and line 11 is technical. Mr. Chairman, if anybody would like a further explanation, I'd be glad to do it if we want to go into the body of the bill itself.
Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. Chairman, one last item. The House decided to do this morning do a mirror bill of this bill. So they've done their own amendments, and I think there's 7 or 8 of them. So that's going to be an interesting conference committee, too.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm just curious about more details. The interfund loan for the University Science Initiative, more details. You just said we took that out of the SIPA. I don't know exactly what you're getting at by that, and I assume this is just financing of where funds come from. My understanding is there's $100 million appropriation that will be complete as of June 30th. I'm not entirely sure why there would need to be an interfund loan, so I'm curious why a change to an interfund loan that I don't understand what the purpose of it would be.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry if I misstated it or put it out wrong. The interfund loan is not necessarily tied into the UW, to the science initiative. The interfund loan is using SIPA funds to guarantee all the other projects. And this goes back to the difference in philosophy between this body and the body down the hall, where they are using SIPA funds guaranteed by the school land trust reserve account, guaranteeing it, whereas we are using the actual savings, the money we have, the cash we have on hand.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just following up a little bit on that, but I see on page 2 the concept of adding to the interfund loan exclusion list or the appropriation for the University Science Initiative in Section 8, Priority 2 of this Act. And I'm curious why that's being added if theoretically the appropriation's already there. What is this anticipating that could happen that it's trying to prevent from happening? I just don't see it. I don't understand yet the motivation by the Senate Appropriations Committee to put that there. I don't know if it's good or bad. I just really don't understand the motivation.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, what we're doing in the amendment is we're actually changing it from the Department of A&I to the State Construction Department. I believe that's all we're doing. The SIPA aspect, I don't think, has anything to do with this.
Are you ready for the question?
Oh, no. This doesn't...
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I'm having a little trouble working my way all the way through this and figuring out how much money is at stake here. My sense is we're spending a lot of money here. We're dealing with a $902 million deficit, and some of this is direct spending, and some of it is indirect. That loan that this amendment is getting rid of, Mr. Chairman, is going to reduce our revenue from the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund for quite a period of time because the interest rate is low compared to what we would otherwise earn. I'm not quite sure how to evaluate that. And, Mr. Chairman, trying to understand how to vote on this amendment and the other amendments, I want to ask one question on the bill as a whole. And that, Mr. Chairman, is, you know, capital construction is classically something that you can often postpone for a few years in dire budget straits. Is there anything in this bill that would cause a terrible crisis if we just killed the whole bill? If there is, then we've really got to pay careful attention to these amendments. If there isn't, we can vote them up or vote them down and vote the whole bill down. So that's my question, Mr. Chairman. What is there in this bill that we can't do without?
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, that's actually a decision each of you has to look into your soul to make. But I would say the bulk of it, you get the gist of the bill by looking at page 13 and 14. That's basically what the bill does, and the rest is you know, a couple of extra little things, or big things, and that in the case of the $25 million loan. But that is a $1 million challenge grant, but that is removed in the standing committee amendment. But you see the $9 million contingency, then there's Sheridan College, it's a planning grant for $385,000. This is all the general fund money. LCCC has a building Reno, PE building Reno. They're paying for that out of other funds. Northwest Community College has a performing arts center that's just shy of $500,000. And they also have a student center that is being matched. I'm sorry, the $495,000, they're both being matched. The Albany City Campus for LCCC, that's other funds. So the damage that we're taking is the one on the far left column. And in many cases, they're being matched locally, which is traditional. If we just kill the entire bill, I think one of the things that's going to happen right off the bat is we'll lose the federal funds for Cheyenne, Guernsey, and the Guernsey Air Tower. Those are all federal funds. That's $68 million. We are paying $28 million. And then the other funds are providing $62
million. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A little bit of discussion. I thought I heard you say that you did a couple of things there. Was that you had taken the money away from the Torrington prison, and the other one was you had some of the private funds on the dormitories that you had taken away. Maybe a little discussion on the dormitories that we couldn't put those back in, but make sure that the trustees or whatever the people actually had to vote on them, so there's some oversight in that regard. So I guess what was going to be built in Torrington that's no longer being built, because that's in my backyard. I need to know about that.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burns.
There is a portion of the prison in Torrington that is shelled out. And I'm trying to remember how many more prisoners it can take. I think it's 100 or 120 or something like that. And we have 13.5 million sitting in an account that was dedicated to finishing the interior of that so they could take the prisoners. Your appropriations committee decided that we needed the money more down at Rollins for that fund. It's basically building fund for the repairs to Rollins, because it's in much more dire shape. And I think we took $8 million, if I'm not mistaken. I think there's about $6 million left, something like that. As to the dorms, this was something that had been put forward, frankly, in this bill that it was kind of sprung on the Senate side and just came out of nowhere. It wasn't vetted through any committee. And then you had that exclusionary language so that only LCCC could benefit from that. I was going to amend it so that it would be open to any college, but the rest of our committee said, no, let's kill it. We really can't afford that, especially when money's coming from the Permanent Trust Fund. And on the one hand, we're asking the treasurer to get us as much income as we can, and we're only charging 0.1% on it.
Senator Meyer.
I'm fine with the what's going on with you taking that money from Torrington, actually, because the DOC was trying, I think, to turn the medium security prison into a higher security prison by just putting some people in there that necessarily weren't medium security but didn't have the risk profile maybe of somebody that was a higher security, but they were fudging what that was supposed to actually be. So not putting that other pot on is all right now in my book. But, the 0.1%, Mr. Chairman, I concur with the Chairman of Appropriations. if that was the pool funds, which is only 1.1, that's not much of a loss. But if you take it from the PMTF, that's a huge hit to our general fund in the future, and we probably shouldn't subsidize one part of our government at the expense of all of our government.
Senator Coe. Uh-huh.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a suggestion for the body. This is last day for general file. And this is first reading on this bill. We could stay here tonight till 7:30, 8 o'clock, and still be on this bill. So I'm going to make a suggestion to the body because we've had a long week. We've worked late hours. We've worked hard. Getting out of here 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. I'm going to make a suggestion that we pass the standing committee amendment, pass the bill, come back, you know, give everybody time to come back on second reading, bring their amendments if they want to put stuff back in, show respect for the work of the Appropriations Committee on this bill, and get out of here tonight. We all need to get out of here. We've been working hard, so that's my suggestion to the body.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burns.
That sounds great to me because I've got to drive the other end of the state, but I think you would have to get everybody who is on the Committee of the Whole amendments to withdraw their amendments and bring second reading amendments.
Senator Vaughn Flater.
Flater. Chairman, you're getting there. So anyway, I would suggest that you'd ask, too, that if they would like to withdraw and bring them as second reading amendments. And if not, we can deal with them as we go.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Burns.
The business before the body right now is the standing committee amendment.
Question on the amendment. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the committee motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 121, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Motion passed. Standing Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 121 is passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Landon. Senator Landon.
I'm listed as a sponsor of Committee of the Whole Amendments Number 1 and Number 3, and I would like to withdraw those, and we'll present those to the body on second reading.
No objections. So moved. Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am sponsor on Amendment Number 2 to 121. Respectfully withdraw those, bring them back next week.
No objections. So moved.
Yeah.
Senator Nethercott.
I really don't want to.
Senator Nethercott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I will move, I will put this back to second reading, but I would just say, based just to dovetail off Senator Burns' comments today so you can remember on Tuesday, after this long weekend, this particular amendment does discuss the college dormitory build, which does not add to major maintenance and which has been expanded to the colleges.
Is it appropriate to debate if somebody's withdrawing a motion?
Senator Kensky. Not debating.
Telling you.
It was a free withdrawal
statement. Yeah, I mean, Mr. Chairman, if I may. Privilege of the floor, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nethercott, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you. I mean, this just expresses my frustration of being prepared to present this particular amendment at 8 a.m. this morning and seeing the bill continually move back throughout the day. And so just wanting to make sure that the chamber has enough time to look at this particular amendment over the weekend so we can be prepared to discuss it thoughtfully and timely on Tuesday to give it the attention that it needs for all of our community colleges across the state. So with that, I would withdraw this motion until Tuesday.
No opposition, so moved. We're back on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a favorable recommendation, say aye on Senate File 121.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion passes. Committee of the Whole, the next bill for our consideration is Senate File 23. Would the reading clerk read the bill?
Senate File 23, Possession of Non-Plant Form Marijuana, an Act Relating to Controlled Substances, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, was referred to Committee Number 1, which turned to Committee Recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Christensen?
Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 23, Possession of Non-Plant Form Marijuana. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a good bill we've seen before. It is even better than it was last year and the year before that. And we laid it out earlier. It talks about a liquid substance of up to 36 fluid ounces, a other type of substance at 3 ounces, and then for the highly concentrate, 3 grams. This is the bill that fixes the hole in the law that the judges have been asking for 3 years. It's a confusing hole in the law that has set kids up from Wyoming to get in trouble when they've traveled out of state. And so I'd suggest we move this bill forward and go with that. Thank you.
Question's been called. Yep. Senator Rothfuss. As soon as I can get you on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I did intend to debate this bill for quite a while, honestly. I think this is actually worse than last year, and we had a robust debate about it last year. But I'll just suggest at this point that everybody diligently recall the debate from last year, which all still applies, and then imagine some really good arguments on the additional points for this Committee of the Whole. And with that, just vote against the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 23, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion passes.
Yes.
Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 87. Will the reading clerk please read it in?
Senate File 87, Hathaway Scholarship Eligibility, sponsored by Senator Kinski, an act relating to higher education, was referred to Committee Number 4, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Coe, Ellis, and Pappas. Noes, Senators Rothfuss and Wasserberger. Senator Coe, Chairman.
Yeah, let me get you on here. You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Mr. Chairman, move in Committee of the Whole rise and report it. Do so with a do-pass recommendation on Senate File 87. There is a standing committee amendment. ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 87, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 2.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment and for explanation of the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment, defer to Senator Kinski.
Senator Kinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We can dispose of the Standing Committee Amendment very quickly. In the bill, there's a proper name, Work Key Score. This amendment gets rid of that proper name and substitutes a generic name, Career Technical Aptitude Assessment. I'd call for the question on the amendment.
Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Dekinsky's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment to Senate File 87 say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
Amendments. Mr. Chairman, thank you. This bill is brought to you by our president and as well as a number of districts all across the state. It enables a great deal of an improvement in the flexibility of selection on the Hathaway Scholarship Program to enable career and technical education concentrators to more readily take advantage of the Hathaway. It also alleviates a burden on particularly the smaller districts where they lack the resources to do everything, and they often have to choose between putting kids on the academic track for the Hathaway or an academic track for their real interest, which is career and technical education. So it's a fairly simple bill. The outcome of a report that this body required, and it's endorsed by our statewide organization representing the school boards. I'd urge your affirmative consideration.
Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 87 say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Bill passes. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 92. Will the reading clerk read the bill?
Senate File 92, Electronic Logging Devices Enforcement, sponsored by Senator Agar, an act relating to commercial vehicles, was referred to Committee Number 8, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Agar, Anderson, Baldwin, Christensen, and Meyer. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill, Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a do pass motion on Senate File 92, Electronic Logging Devices Enforcement. And, Mr. Chairman, there was a Standing Committee Amendment. I'd ask that the clerk read it in at this time.
Senate File 92, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 1.
Mr. Chairman, I will move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 92. And for explanation of the bill and the amendment, I will ask you to call on the good senator from Thermopolis.
Senator Agar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On introduction of this bill, we talked about the issue with the electronic logbook mandate coming down and the impact it's going to have on our state. We also have heard our U.S. delegation talk about this issue. Mr. Chairman, with that, we're going to jump right into the meat of the amendment because as the bill was drafted, we had to go in and make some tweaks to make it fit within the federal exemptions so that we didn't put our federal funding at risk, Mr. Chairman. If you look at page 2, lines 1 through 24, subsection F, the amendment simply says that we're going to allow the department to prescribe operating times and other requirements of motor carrier drivers and equipment to allow specified motor carrier drivers in Wyoming to complete paper records of duty status rather than electronic logbooks, Mr. Chairman. As we move down, we lay out those exemptions that can use these forms of logbooks. One's a commercial driver not participating in interstate commerce. Little double I, livestock and agricultural community or commodity haulers within the state of Wyoming hauling their own goods or participating in rodeo, horse racing, or fair events. And that term fair events also encompasses horse shows and that kind of stuff, Mr. Chairman. We move down to 3i. Those individuals who use paper logbooks no more than 8 days during a 30-day period or 96 days during a calendar year. Four, Mr. Chairman, are driveway, tow-away drivers. Those are the piggybacks that we see where one truck is pulling another truck. Five, we see those models that are were made before 2000. In six, we specify that the non-use of ELDs shall not invalidate any safety inspection. And seven, we will not prevent the voluntary compliance with the federal law on any of these individuals that is exempt, Mr. Chairman. With that, we say that no officer, or at little g, we say no officer is defined in statute shall enforce any rule or regulation in Wyoming for permissible operation times and equipment standards except as provided in F that we looked at earlier, Mr. Chairman. With that, I ask for your favorable consideration of the amendment, and we'll stand for questions.
Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Number 1 to Senate File 92 say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Amendment's been passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Agar, there is a committee of the whole amendment. Would you like to have that read in at this time?
I will defer back to my chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to withdraw this. I'll bring it back on second.
Thank you. Back on the bill. Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion with the committee of the whole rise and report to do so with the favorable recommendation that Senate File 92 pass, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Bill's passed the committee of the whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
How about microphone for him?
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm at the floor.
You may.
Before I make the motion, Senators, thank you so much. This has been a heck of a week. You've had a few of these. This has been one of the heaviest lifts, in my 12 sessions down here. It's been a heck of a lift. My hats off to staff. My hats off to you. We've got through this. Everybody's got a few bruised ribs here and there, but we'll heal up over the 3-day weekend. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for your really hard work. Thank you for the decorum, considering the late hours and the stresses. And this, I just have admiration for each and every one of you. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee hold rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say no.
Aye.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Well, the reader read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Vice President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate Joint Resolution 3, do pass. Senate File 102, do pass. Senate File 71, do pass. Senate Joint Resolution 5, do pass. Senate File 105, do pass amended. Senate File 121, do pass amended. Senate File 23, do pass. Senate File 87, do pass amended. Senate File 92, do pass amended. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I move for adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried and the report has been adopted. Do we have anything else? Do you have any? Mr. Floor. Majority Floor Leader. Thank you. Mr. Vice President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until Tuesday at 10 o'clock in the morning, which, just for those in case you're wondering, that's, if it makes you feel better, that's 12 noon Eastern time, but 10 o'clock Mountain time. Thank you. You've all heard the motion. Oh, announcements? I'm sorry, Senator Case.
Excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, your Corporations Committee number 7 will meet at 8 a.m. Tuesday morning in Jonah Room S18. We'll take up House Bill 23, Audit Requirements for Conservation Districts, House Bill 40, Engrossed, Election Code Revisions, House Bill 126, Limited Liability Companies Series. And that's latter bills kind of as if time permits, and I expect it to lope over to the next meeting, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there any other announcements? Seeing none. Oh, Senator Burns, you're over in the corner.
Mr. Vice President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet at noon Tuesday upon noon recess down at the JAC room. We will take up House Bill 110, Wyoming Retirement Plans Member Accounts.
Thank you. Any other announcements? I don't see any. You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Boy, that was enthusiasm. Opposed? No? The Senate's adjourned until 10 a.m. next Tuesday. Thank you very much, everyone.